Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm editor Candace Gibson, joined by staff writer Jane McGrath.
Hey there.
Jane, when you think about presidential speeches, or really any speech in general, there's essentially two different types of appeals that you can make to the members of an audience. You can make a pathos appeals and you're appealing to someone's emotions, or you can make an ethos appeal and you're appealing to someone's morality and sense of ethics.
Oh, I recall this from my rhetoric class. Yeah.
Yeah. I took speech writing my senior year of college, spring semester, thinking it would sort of be a snooze and it'd be, you know, a way to pass the time until I graduated. And it turned out to be a really tough class.
Yeah, it was one of my favorite. I loved rhetoric.
Yeah. And obviously, I've learned a lot about speech, judging from my lofty enunciation and vocabulary. But the point being, a couple different presidents throughout history seem to have preferred one method or another, depending on the circumstances. And there's some pretty memorable ones that speak to each of these different types of delivery. I think about the Berlin Wall speech, which we've had a podcast about before, when Kennedy said that he was a Berliner, or as some people have misinterpreted, he was a jelly donut. That definitely made a huge emotional appeal to the people of Berlin, saying,
sure,
I'm one of you. But when you come to something like ethos and appealing to someone's sense of morality, you think about someone like Abraham Lincoln.
Definitely. Gettysburg Address, maybe.
And that one even, I think, had a bit of an emotional resonance to it, too. But one of the most ethical proclamations he made was the Emancipation Proclamation.
That's true. And it's pretty interesting. In contrast to the Gettysburg Address, it was very legal. It was a legal document, and it was a military tactic, basically. And but like you said, it did appeal to morality at the same time, so there is that contrast in it.
And if you read the Emancipation Proclamation, which we're not going to do for you because I think that would lose you a couple lines through, it really is a bunch of legalese, and it's 700 words long, and it actually didn't free any slaves at all.
That's right, and people say that, you know, it was kind of unnecessary because there were congressional acts that were already in place that said that whatever slaves that the northern troops encountered, they would free if they conquered that area.
Right. So essentially they set up the precedent that because slaves were property, if the Union troops came in and conquered the area, then they acquired all the property, the slaves being part of that.
Yeah, and they would be free forever.
And Lincoln said from the beginning to his cabinet and his advisors, he wasn't going to try to free the slaves because, you know, the country was in such a state of upheaval already, and his biggest concern was, you know, getting the seceded South, the Confederacy, to come back to the Union. And the cabinet had at least some support for the idea of gradual emancipation, that this would be something that could be, you know, slowly handed out over time, which is almost like, I have to mention him, of course, almost like the idea Thomas Jefferson had back in the day about slavery, that eventually the institution would work its way out. But Lincoln one day, he was actually on the way to the war secretary's infant's son's funeral, and he was riding in a carriage with some of his top confidants, and he said, you know what, I'm going to do it. I'm going to set the slaves free. But he did it in such a shrewd and calculated way that it really clashes in my mind with the image I've always had of Lincoln, which is this top hat wearing, scraggly bearded, sort of droopy eyed, sad, somber man. He was quite a politician with this.
That's true. And it sort of flies in the face of most people's ideal image of Lincoln in terms of someone who was out to free the slaves from the beginning. Like you said, coming back to your point, he didn't start this war with the intent of ending slavery in the South. And he was against slavery. But like you said, he wanted to preserve the Union first and foremost. And he actually stumbled into this situation because it was a great military tactic to use. And he actually calculatedly used the time of immediately after the Antietam, the Battle of Antietam, which happened to be the bloodiest war in the Civil War, or the bloodiest battle, excuse me. And so after this happened, you know, the country is suffering, obviously. People are wondering, what are we fighting about after all? You know, and it's fairly confusing what caused the war, and it's not exactly slavery that caused it in the first place. So when Lincoln put out the Emancipation Proclamation, it really focused everyone's mind on slavery itself.
It did. It boiled down the cause of the war to slavery, and Lincoln was advised by the Secretary of State, William Seward, not to deliver the proclamation until the Union had had a victory, because in his mind, he thought it would look like the Union was claiming defeat to the world. And it's important to remember that at this time, the South was still getting support, sort of surreptitious support, albeit from France and England. So the Union wanted to make sure that Europe and the rest of the world knew it was still strong.
And that's right. And I stumbled across that, and it made me think, like, why would these international powers support the South in the first place? And it's interesting because it was a lot about trade, because obviously
Definitely.
The South controlled the cotton.
Cotton.
Yeah, yep. And actually it wasn't a too distant memory that, you know, the Second War of Independence, the War of 1812, had happened, and so they were still kind of hostile towards the United States at that time. And also there were questions and hostilities about the Canadian border, even more recently than that. So England was very quickly to jump on board to the South, but when the war became about slavery, they couldn't do that anymore.
Right, because they had decried slavery in their own country several years ago, and so they couldn't possibly be on board with a country. It's important to remember at this time that the Confederacy was its own country, essentially.
At least they considered it.
At least they considered themselves that. And we should note that before the Emancipation Proclamation was delivered on January 1st, 1863, that's when it was laid down into law, supposedly, there was a preliminary one that came out on September 22nd, 1862. And in this version, Lincoln was trying to give the Confederacy a chance to rejoin the Union, and as a gift with purchase, I guess, they could keep their slaves as long as they came back to the Union.
That's right.
He would work that out later on. But none of the Confederate states hopped on board. There were a couple of individual landowners who wanted to sign these sort of one-on-one loyalty packs, but Lincoln, he wasn't buying that.
Yeah, it's interesting. This document goes down in history as like, oh, it freed the slaves. But at the same time, like, man, what was Lincoln doing here? He was giving the South an out. He was like, you can keep your slaves. That's what the document was saying. You can keep them, and it'll be fine if you rejoin now, if you lay down your arms.
And the reason there was such opposition to this, at least in the cabinet, was that they feared there'd be a total massacre and utter pandemonium in the South if the slaves were freed. I guess they thought that they would, you know, wipe out the plantation owners, and then they would storm up north and take all the Northerners' jobs. And racism was just as prevalent in the North as it was in the South. And there were some who even postulated that the war was a conspiracy and all the Northern soldiers were being killed so that the freed slaves could come up to the North and take their jobs.
That's right. And that's to help to spur their draft riots at the time, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the irony behind this was that even if the Emancipation Proclamation had freed all the slaves and it had accomplished that goal, you have to think about the way that information was disseminated at this time. It's not like we had CNN. It's not like we had NPR. It took a while for the news to get out. And in some cases, at some plantations in places like the Florida Keys or even in Texas, the slaves didn't hear the news until well after Lincoln's assassination.
That's right. And that's where we get the idea of Juneteenth. It was a date where, June 19th, 1965 was the date that slaves in Texas actually first heard of the Emancipation Proclamation. And so that's when Texas actually celebrates that date.
And when you look at the order in which the states let go of the institution of slavery, you'll see that the border states really were some of the last to loosen their grip on the institution.
That's right, and they were left out of the proclamation, right? It didn't apply to them at all.
Right, and that was another political move. Lincoln knew that his hold on Congress was pretty tenuous, and he feared that he would polarize the Republican Party and lose all the Republican support if he continued to push this idea of emancipating the slaves. And really, if you listen to the detractors behind the Emancipation Proclamation's criticism, it was illegal. He was acting far out of his jurisdiction if you uphold the fact that the Confederacy was its own country at this time. And in our article about the Emancipation Proclamation on How Stuff Works, the author uses this really great analogy. She said, it would be like the United States saying to France, you have to outlaw smoking. We don't really have the authority to say that to another country.
Yeah, that would be ridiculous. Yeah.
And so Democrats and Republicans who were really trying to follow the Constitution to the letter told Lincoln, you can't do this.
That's right. And Lincoln actually violated the Constitution, some say, in many different ways. He withheld habeas corpus and stuff like this. But he sort of hid behind the idea that these were military tactics. And, you know, to this day, Lincoln is a hero to most people in this country, and they defend him in these acts because they were military tactics.
But back then, I don't think he satisfied a lot of people with the proclamation. The abolitionists wanted complete freedom of all slaves, and then the plantation owners, of course, wanted to keep holding on to their workers.
So he didn't satisfy either of those.
He didn't satisfy
groups.
Anyone. It's like he was trying to walk such a straight line that both sides just completely scoffed at him. And then, of course, you know, like we already mentioned, there were the conspiracies from the Northerners that thought all the slaves were just being sent up north to take over their lives.
Right. But one aspect of this that was really brilliant, and it actually had a great immediate effect, was the fact that black soldiers, freed slaves, would join the North and become soldiers. And there was about 180,000, I believe, that joined after the proclamation was declared.
And the proclamation made it explicitly clear that freed slaves, or I guess all blacks in general, could join the armed forces. And I think that people were suspicious of their efforts at first, but they really proved themselves. I mean, obviously, this was a cause that they were perhaps the closest to. So, we know also, when we look at the Emancipation Proclamation, that it's, like we said, it's a bunch of legalese, but one of the boldest things about it, if you really get down to the language, is that it's written in present tense, and some of the drafts that Lincoln had made of the proclamation were written in future tense, but he reasoned, no, I want this to be immediate. I want it to be prescient, and I want people to really stand up and pay attention. And if you think about it, that really would have grabbed people's attention. You know, hearing slavery spoken of as an institution of the past.
It's not like a threat of the future that's kind of nebulous and may never happen.
Right, right. But perhaps the biggest ripple effect from the Emancipation Proclamation was that it dealt a severe blow to the Southern psyche, because for the first time, poor white people in the South started to realize that their family members and their sons and themselves were dying so that wealthy white landowners could continue to build
their legacy. That's right. And if they didn't hold slaves, they don't have a stake in this. They might be anti-slavery even, or, you know, get behind the South for other reasons, of like the rights of the states reasons. But now, after the Emancipation Proclamation, it's all about slavery.
It really is. It really is. Like we said, an incredibly shrewd move. So it took a while for these effects to take hold in the United States. And then after the Civil War was over, we know that things didn't exactly work out smoothly from there on out. When Andrew Johnson came into office after Lincoln's assassination, he was sharply criticized for being too lenient on the Confederacy because he was just trying to, you know, piece the Union back together as Lincoln would have wanted.
Right.
And again, harsh criticism from his detractors. And if we look at what happened to the slaves after they were freed, we see it's still not a pretty story at all, constitutionally speaking, either.
Yeah, that's right. There were contraband camps, I believe. I mean, these were camps that were meant to protect the slaves near northern forts. But at the time, like, it ended up being not the greatest place to live, you know, these contraband camps, and it ended up giving them not a very good living.
At all. And when we look at the laws that were passed in order to protect the newly freed slaves, we have the 13th Amendment, which officially abolished slavery, but it didn't give them citizenship. Then the 14th, it prevented states from holding out on slaves' rights without due process. And then the 15th gave all the freed slaves voting rights. And we know about the Jim Crow laws that would have followed. Absurd tests that blacks would be made to undergo at voting and polling stations. And so they weren't completely assimilated into the American mainstream until well after the Civil Rights Movement.
Yeah, it was a long, painful process, but at least the proclamation started. And
we may have bested your view of the Emancipation Proclamation and maybe of Lincoln. Maybe now when you think of him, you won't think of him as the sad, doe-eyed wartime president, but you'll think of him as a very shrewd politico.
Definitely.
I know that my opinion has been changed of him.
Yeah.
And you can read even more about Lincoln and the Civil War and the families that were torn apart by the battle on HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.
Comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.